Okay, so the Abrabano begins by commenting on Yehuda's speech to Yosef. Now he calls him an Av Adon and a Moshel. And these are three different terms for authority: father, a lord, a tyrant. So he says, why these three? He says, each one corresponds to something that the brothers tried to do to Yosef, which is
But why do
essentially.
you, why do you translate Moshe as tyrant? I would have thought
That's usually
Moshe
what
as
it
a,
is. A ruler, but
Moshe as a ruler.
it's a ruler, but a ruler by force.
Okay.
So Yehuda is, these terms, though, are unraveling the things that the brothers tried to do to Yosef. Hem kivnu b'mechirato, sh'leya od leben zikunim li'akov aviyam, u'keneged zeh, samau Hashem, lo leben, aval la'av leparo. They wanted to stop him being a ben zikunim, and instead he was even made to an av. They wanted to stop acting like an Adon. He was going to treat them like Ro'im. And in the end, he was an Adon. They tried to kick him out of the house. And instead, he was made into the Adon of the whole house of Paro. Also, Kivnu Shalom Shalom, they shouldn't be the Moshel. They said to him, Imashol Timshol Banu, right, sarcastically. Ukenegedze, Samo Hashem Moshel, Kol Eretz Mitzrayim. Not only was he a Moshel on them, he was a Moshel on all of Mitzrayim. Kol Ze Mochiach Haflagat Hashgacha Elokit. This shows the, basically, the multiply, the way that Hashem does things by a in factors, not just he doesn't just make something happen, but he makes it happen in a greater degree than it was tried to be undone. This was this wasn't just a coincidence, this was an amazing thing. Okay, fine. The other one from the Abarbanel that we have tonight is towards the end of the parasha, when Yaakov is contemplating going down to Mitzrayim, and he doesn't want to go, and Hashem tells him, "I'll go down with you to Mitzrayim, and I'm going to take you out as well." So the Rabbi wonders, "What does that mean? I'll go down with you to Mitzrayim? How does Hashem go down? It's not very majestic, and it's not very incorporeal. So how does Hashem go down?" So he says, he is known through his acts. And how do we see his acts? The more that his nation has Hatzlacha, the more widespread knowledge of God is. Shows how great he is. Blaze, kishayiglu Yisrael, he needs to make a karat vidyat mitziyuta el vicholot bifneharoim. When his nation gets exiled, so then the knowledge of God goes down. So the Abarbanel eventually says, Anochi eredim chamitzrayma, ki britcha yesh li yirida. When you go down, I go down. When you go down, people don't become aware of me anymore. When you come up, that I'm raising my own profile in the world. And so that's how that works. It's not that God is going down or going up, but rather the awareness and the knowledge and the discussion of him in the public sphere follows Yaakov and his descendants. Okay, let's move on to the Or HaChaim. Or HaChaim, here's a
Isn't
classic.
there a simple explanation? Just the same, Yaakov is going down, so I'm going down with you. That's a simple explanation then.
It's too simple for the Abarbanel because he says God doesn't move anywhere and doesn't have a body. So what does that mean that he goes down, or that he goes with Yaakov at all? All right. So the Or HaChaim says on the words "Vayeshev Yisrael be'eretz Mitzrayim," and then it says "be'eretz Goshen." Specifically, they lived in Goshen. Tzarich l'dat lama kafal lomar beretz Mitzrayim beretz Goshen, and what's the kesher? So he says, itbayer katuv al pi ma shekatavnu b'pasuk ki legoy gadol. He says he's explained this already once when Hashem told Avram that they were going to be a goy gadol. Kisibat yiridat Mitzrayim hi lahalot nitzotzei kedusha asher nitpazru uva'u shama. The point, the reason for going down to Mitzrayim is to find the sparks in Mitzrayim and to be able to bring them out. What sparks? So the Or Chaim is one of the pioneers of the idea that there are sparks of holiness everywhere, but they become encrusted and covered by klipot of tum'ah. And our job is to remove the klipot of tum'ah, reveal the nitzotzot, and carry them out. He says, "Vuhu omro vayeshev Yisrael beretz Mitzrayim perish shehi makom klipah mazohemet." Eretz Mitzrayim is a place of klipot. Be'eretz Goshen miloshon hagasha, ki shama hugshu kol nitzotzei kedusha. The nitzotzot were brought to Goshen be'emtzaut anaf hakedusha shehu Yisrael shehu bebachinat even hashoevet ladomelo. What happens? Am Yisrael goes down to Goshen, and they're like a magnet. All of the nitzotzei kedusha get drawn to Goshen, and then they're going to pull them out from there. That's why he says lashon yachid, ramaz al hayotam b'lev miyuchad kulam, ve'in b'nei peirud b'amzut ken v'yachzu ba perush achazu davar ba. In other words, once they got there, they acted as one. They were Yisrael as one, and they were going to pull out the nitzotzot. They had many, many children, which would get more and more and more nitzotzot. He even ends and says, this is one of the secrets that was taught by the Magid to Rav Yosef Karo. Rav Yosef Karo, aside from writing the Shulchan Aruch and the Beit Yosef and the Kesef Mishnah, also wrote a sefer called the Magid Misharim, which was a recording of all of the secrets that the angel taught him about the parasha. So this is one of them. Okay, we have several comments by the Chatam Sofer. I don't think we're going to do them all. Pick this short one over here. Taruf Taraf Yosef Valori Itiv Adhena. Right, this is what Yaakov had said. This is what Yehuda quotes Yaakov as saying, that Yosef was devoured. Taruf Taraf Yosef. Now, Rashi famously points out that Yaakov never really properly mourns Yosef, because in the back of his mind, he really believes that Yosef is alive. So the Chatam Sofer says, Nira she Yaakov Avinu, lo chashash she Yosef mit. He wasn't worried that Yosef was actually dead. Midilo nira ela b'shum pa'am b'chalom, because he never came to him in a dream, and that's what would have happened. Val korchok, so if that's the case, though, then what did Yaakov think? You have to wonder. Yaakov doesn't think Yosef is dead. Why doesn't he go looking for him? Why doesn't he send a private investigator? Like, what does he think for 20 plus years? Where's Yosef? So he says, Savar shenitraf bedato, v'holech shovav ben hachayot. He thought that he was running around with the animals. Why? Ki chaya achat bar delashma. What did he think, essentially? Thought Yosef had been bitten and driven wild.
Becoming animalistic, basically.
Yeah. And that's why Yosef was never going to come back. And he didn't, he frankly probably was afraid to ever find Yosef, because he wouldn't want to know what became of him. Didn't think that he was good old Yosef anymore. And that's why he never went after him anymore.
When he saw the blood on the shirt, it didn't mean to him automatically, oh, Yosef was killed.
It meant to him that he had been attacked. But he didn't feel that he was dead. So what did he think happened? Apparently, according to the Chatam Sofer, he thought it meant that he had been bitten by this animal that drove him wild. Okay, here's one of the more famous Chatam Sofers in the whole Torah. And it's nice because it's in Yoni Diomer, nice confluence of the calendar year and the parasha. He points out that the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says, Tzom Ha'asiri is Asara Betevet, and Reb Shimon Darash Achamisha Betevet Sheba Shmua LeGola VeYom Shmua Kepanav Dani. Machloka is whether or not it's the 10th or the 5th, etc. The Chatam Sefer says here, Hine, Ma Shamra Rishonim, Ichal Yud Tevet B'Shabbat, Hayam Itanim Bo. Dichtiv Ketov Lecha, Etzem Hayom Hazeh, Itzumo Shayom. So the Chatam Sefer quotes, this is actually the Abu Draham, who says that if Asara B'Tevet were to ever fall out on Shabbat, we would fast on Shabbat, just like we fast on Shabbat for Yom Kippur. Now, lucky for us, according to our calendar, Asara B'Tevet can never fall on Shabbat. But every other fast, which are all rabbinic, every other fast, if it falls on Shabbat, it gets pushed off. But he says Asara B'Tevet would get would stay where it is. And this is a pella. Why is Asara B'Tevet worse than Tisha B'Av? Worse than Tzom Gedalia? Why is it worse? So he says, nearly, Remez min haTorah, the Tzar Chorban Doche Oneg Shabbat. There is a remez that the Tzar of the Chorban pushes off Oneg Shabbos. Where's the remez? This week's Parsha. Sharei, Amru Chazal, V'tavoach Tevach V'achein. That's the Pasuk that describes, it's actually last week's Parsha, now that I realize it. It's Parshat Miketz. The end of last week's Parsha was when Yosef arranged for a feast for the brothers. And it was at the end of that feast that, you know, the brothers get up to go, and then Yosef slips the goblet into Binyamin's bag. So V'tavoach Tevach V'achein is that they prepared the feast. And Chazal say, Erev Shabbat Haya. That was on Erev Shabbat. V'haboker or, Erev Shabbat, I think they mean Leil Shabbat. V'haor boker or, V'hanashim shelcho. They left on Shabbat. They left on Shabbat. Okay. But if they left on Shabbat, they also came back on Shabbat. And here's the problem. When they come back, they confront Yosef. Yosef confronts them. Yosef tells them who they are. And they get scared. And what does Yosef end up doing? He ends up crying on Binyamin's neck. That's what the Torah says. Chatam Sofer says, Eich nafal al tzavar Binyamin, achiv, vayevk al chorban beit hamikdash, b'shabbat. How could Yosef do that? Yosef keeps Shabbat. How could he be crying about the chorban beit hamikdash on Shabbat? V'al korchach docha onek Shabbos. So we learn from Yosef, because Yosef was crying on the neck of Binyamin because he saw that in the future, in the portion of Binyamin, the Chorban Beit HaMikdash was going to happen. And Binyamin saw that Shiloh was going to be dismantled. So they were both crying on each other. That was crying for Chorban Beit HaMikdash.
If Chorban is Doche Shabbat, why don't we say the same thing about Tisha B'Av?
Excellent. Elakasha, my Omei Da'asar B'Tevet Fe'mi Tisha B'Av. Okay, if that's the case, Tisha B'Av should for sure be Doche. But it's not. Haimet Kamosh Katavti. I've written this before. Shehatchalat haTzara hi yoter ra'ah migomra. Because the beginning of a tzara is worse than the end. Ki az titzmach Yeshu'ah. Because the end of a tzara is paradoxically, the beginning of the flowering of the redemption. Whereas the beginning of a tzara is the beginning of the end. Right? And he quotes the Gemara in Makot. This is why Rabbi Akiva, when he saw the Shualim, when he saw the foxes running around, he started laughing because he knew, okay, this means that the Yeshua is going to come. And it's going to be as even greater than the Puranut. Now, he goes on for a little bit like that. And he says, Ad Yom, hold on. So he says, Ki im yud tevet, shuat chalot ha-paroniot. Asar b'tevet is the beginning of the cycle of the minor fasts. It was when the siege began. Ukim mosif v'holech, al korchach ra'u l'hitanot afilu b'shabbat. That's why you're supposed to fast on Asar b'tevet even on Shabbat, because it's the worst. It's the beginning. It means that the bad stuff is going to happen. What Tisha B'Av means is that the good stuff is going to happen. Okay, fine. That's enough of that. So this is the point that Chatam Sofer makes. He makes similar points in other places, and if I remember correctly, the overarching point is that when the beginning of the cycle is there, then that's the then that means that for sure, for sure, for sure, the Pu'anut is going to happen. That's what it means. Once the beginning starts, the rest is coming. There's nothing you can do about it. But Tisha B'Av is the beginning of the end. You know the good stuff is going to happen after Tisha B'Av. Okay. That's a famous Chatam Sofer that he learns from Yosef crying on the neck of Binyamin. Okay. Okay. The Malbim over here, this is a Malbim getting philosophical. This is when Yosef tells the brothers not to worry too much. He's not going to take any revenge on them. Why? Ki lo atem shalachtam oti hena, ki Elohim. You're not the ones who sent me down here. It was really God. And you may have thought bad stuff, but God thought good stuff. So he says, l'fize yuchal liyot she'idagu al guf ha'maaseh. It could be that the brothers were worried about two things. Number one, they're worried about the guf ha'maaseh, the terrible thing that they did. They sold their brother into slavery. So he shiv lahem, she'en lahem itatzev al guf ha'maaseh. Doesn't have to worry about that. So he says, two reasons. Number one, yitatzvu al chet ba'atzmo she'machru ataveyam al zeh amar lo atem shalachtam oti. The truth is, you didn't do it. Davar klali ha'na'asa l'fleita gdola l'achayot amrav, hagam shenidme lanu she'na'asa b'mikra, even though it looks like it happened, like incidentally and with full free will, be'emet po'al hashkacha. Atem ha'item kekelim b'yad ha'lohim, she'hu machar oti hina l'tovat ha'klal. It was clear that all of this was destiny, and obvious that Hashem's hand was behind it, and you were just pawns. He's not the only one who says this, that the brothers did not have free will, that when they sold him down, that was just something that Hashem arranged, and they couldn't control it. Fine. Adain yatzvu zeh ba'atzmam, mashamina Hashem otam liot shevet apo. Yeah, but they don't want to be pawns to do such a terrible thing. Why do they have to? Why did they have to be chosen to be the tools in such a horrible, horrible way for all perpetuity that it's known that they did this? They feel bad about that. They're annoyed about that. So to that he says, "Al zeh yishiv shebemet oya devara." Truth is, it wasn't so bad. Vayisimeni al av leparo v'asayimi bazeh tova gdola. Says, if you're worried about doing something terrible to me, in the end, it worked out the best. I got to be at the top of in the top of the palace. So Yosef basically makes these two points to the brothers. Don't worry about the etzem hamaaseh, about what you did, because you didn't do it. And don't worry about the fact that you were chosen for such an unsavory task, because it really worked out the best for me. You may think that it looks bad, but I quite enjoyed it. That's what Yosef says. Okay, let's move on to the Hamikdavar. Okay, so this
He couldn't have
comment is.
enjoyed, Yosef couldn't have enjoyed the years he spent in the prison, though. Right?
Well, in the end, it worked out for the best, so yeah.
It worked out in the end. Yes.
Yeah. So the Hamikdavar, the Netziv, does something interesting here. I always like to point this out. The Hamikdavar was the Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin, the last Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin, in the 1800s. And he actually was co-Rosh Yeshiva with Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, the Beis Halevi, the great grandfather of the Rav.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's interesting when you look in the Beit Halevi and then you look at the Hamik Davar, it actually comes up quite often that they have similar ideas. And they're original ideas, they're not ideas that have been said before. And I wonder if those ideas just were floating around, if they heard them from each other, if they, I don't know, if they talked about them. They don't quote each other, but they have the similar ideas. And this is one of those. When Yosef says, Ha'od Avi Chai, the Hamikdavar and the Beit HaLevi both point out. It's a silly question. Ha'or Avichai. The Yehuda has already answered this. Yehuda's whole story is about how Yaakov is alive and going to be really upset if Binyamin doesn't come back. Why is he asking if Yaakov is alive? And then the Torah says that the brothers couldn't respond because they were so scared. What were they going to respond? Yes, Yaakov is alive? Of course he's alive. So he quotes the Gemara in Chagiga that says, I don't know if he quotes the whole Gemara, that says, if Abba Kohen Bar Delai, when he would get to this pasuk, he would say, Oy lanu miyom har tochacha. Woe is to us on the day of judgment. What's so frightening about this pasuk? So his answer is here. Chazal evinu pshata krashehu kematmiha. Yosef wasn't asking a question. He wasn't asking, like, is my father alive? He was saying, how could my father be alive? Why not? Im be'emet or avichai v'lo meit midagato alai b'yoti odea shahiti ohev etzli hayiti ahuv etzlo mikol banav. I was the most beloved, but me'azu hayta tochacha la'achiv. Da'filu im lifi machshavatam danu et Yosef b'tzedek mikol makom hayam lachmo v'lachosh al aviyem sharei yadu ki ahavato azah alav. Yehuda had just finished this long-winded speech about how much Yosef Yaakov loves Binyamin and how he can't survive without Binyamin. And Yosef turns to Yehuda and says, where was all of this compassion on your father when it came to me? If he lived through my going away, then what are you talking about with Binyamin? And the tochacha is that now you guys are saying how much you care about Yaakov's, but I know the truth. They got caught in a lie. And so the Netziv says, and the Beit Yosef says the same thing, that one day when we go and stand before the Beit Din Shamayla and we try to make excuses for ourselves, we try to say, okay, I couldn't do this, or I couldn't do that, or I was busy, or I was tired, or whatever, Hashem will say, okay, you were busy, you were tired, but you had enough energy to do that. You had enough money to buy a burger. You had enough, you were able to stay up and watch some Netflix, right? So if you had an energy for this, you had energy for that. That's the tochach over here. That you find that in the Beit Alevi as well as in the Tziv. Okay. Here is an interesting Tziv over here. There's a famous problem when it comes to the 70 descendants, the 70 nefashot of Yaakov. It lists a lot of people, and there's a whole question about how we get to number 70 and not get stuck on 69. And Rashi says, oh, it's because of Serach bat Asher and Yocheved bat Levi. Those are the two that you have to add. And the Netziv says, this is very strange, because there are very few women mentioned in that whole list. Two women, basically, mentioned in that whole list. Two daughters of Yaakov mentioned in the whole list. Where are all the other daughters? He had 12 sons. Where are all the daughters? And the granddaughters? Where is everybody? So the Netziv says there were, in fact, more, and there were more than 70 souls. There are more descendants of Yaakov that came down with him to Mitzrayim, but the Torah doesn't mention them. It only mentions the important ones. Lo yabem inyan nogel umah Yisraelit. They weren't in some way critical to the nation, Kamosha, like Dina was, for example. But everybody that's mentioned in the list was critical to the nation. I couldn't tell from the Netziv if this meant that there might have been also other boys in the list. He only mentions girls, but it's conceivable that there are other boys that are not mentioned. Okay, let's move on to the Sfas Emes, and we'll finish with the Sfas Emes. There's one other major scene in the parasha that everybody talks about, and that's when Yaakov encounters Yosef for the first time after 22 years. and he cries, or one of them cries on the neck of the other. And it's classically understood that Yaakov is not crying. Yaakov is saying Kriyat Shema, and Yosef is crying on Yaakov. And everybody wonders, why is Yaakov saying Kriyat Shema at this moment? Is it really appropriate? So the Sfas Emes quotes the Maharal, who says that Yaakov wasn't kissing him, he was saying Kriyat Shema. Shenit Dabek Ba'avat Hashem Yitbarach. He took this moment to take the love that he was feeling and to sublimate it to God, to direct it towards God. What about Yosef? Why didn't Yosef do the same thing? Yosef, am I looking at Kriyat Shema? Nira Shazeb Bechinat Yosef Shaya Bevit Adonav Hamitzri Shebechinato Litabek Bashem Av Shosein Yane Olam Azeh Lo Yitvaret Klal. Because Yosef's whole essence was that while working in the king's home, he was constantly involved in other things, but he was also connected to God. And so this was a standard thing for him. But Yaakov, he was l'mal me'tava. He didn't generally involve himself in worldly things at this point. So he needed to be more unidimensional. So that's one idea. Another idea over here, this is a scarier idea of the Sfas Emes in the second column. He mentions the Maharal again. And here he says, I think that the simplest understanding is, Yarei lenafsho shalidei zeh sha'ahava yishkach mimenu avata borei. He was worried that the love of his son would overcome the love of his creator. He wanted to dilute the love that he was feeling, the excitement that he was feeling towards Yosef. And so he said Shema. Quite a radical idea. But it does remind us of a halakha that we learned about tefillah and about the Beit HaKnesset. That one is not supposed to kiss one's child in shul. And the explicit reason for that is that your love for your child shouldn't be more than your love for your creator, definitely not in shul while you're davening. So that's definitely connected to this. Okay. Why don't we jump to the last one over here? Here. The words Va'atal Teatzvu, going back to Yosef telling the brothers, don't be upset, don't be depressed that you were involved in this. So one of my favorite Ma'amari Chazal, Ein Ata Ela Lashon Tshuva. Whenever you see the word Ata with an ayin, which means now in the Torah, it always means Tshuva. Okay? So I have a whole idea about why it means Tshuva, but I don't want to get into it now. But what does it mean over here? He says, "Gam kodem shabo hashvatim b'tshuva, shabo hashvatim b'tshuva, k'dechtiv aval Hashem imanachnu." He says it's true that the shvatim actually already did a little bit of tshuva, because in the previous story, when Yosef caught them the first time, they already said, "Oh, you know why all this is happening? Because of what we did to Yosef."
Your fault, yes.
Exactly. But the Sfas Emes, and this is classic Sfas Emes, says that was tshuva meyira. They were doing tshuva because they knew that they had been caught; they were being punished. So they said, "Ah, this stinks. I hope we don't get punished anymore." Aval ata asu tshuva me'ahava, ne'apach kol achet l'schut. But at this moment, they were doing tshuva me'ahava, not because they were afraid, but because they realized that they were wrong, and they wanted to be right. Ve'ra lam Yosef ki l'mechiyah shalachani, ve'cheinu amida ki kol sibot mitavim mibal sibot mikol makom hachotem ishtaleim al cheto, aval kshemitkabel tshuva. Yosef says, actually, now that you're doing tshuva, the whole thing becomes like a mitzvah. Because everything that you did ended up being for the best. So now that you're doing tshuva me'ava, you can get credit for all this stuff that's going to, the good stuff that's going to happen now. V'zehu shekatav achar kach, v'ata lo atem shalachtem oti heina, hagam ki ken haya mitchila, v'ata achar tshuva.
Okay,
Now,
What
now
are you
that they did
calling right
tshuva, it's tshuva. What?
now? Who are
This
you
is
calling right
Svasemes.
now?
Svasemes.
Svasemes. I'm just wondering where he gets the idea that Atah is always teshuva.
Oh, it's in the
And
Drash.
it's a midrash.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to see a list of places where it says Atah
The Midrash has a
as.
few of them. Midrash has a few of them, and the Gra adds on more. This is one of them. There's a lot, there's a bunch, and you have to be creative sometimes, but
Yeah, okay.
that's the idea over here. So the idea over here is that they're doing tshuva me'ahava, whereas before they did tshuva me'yirah. Okay,
Okay.
we'll stop there. Yishar koach.
Shkoyach.
Yishar koach.
Shkoyach to you. Thanks for the private share.
Yeah. All right,
Bye
have a
bye.
good night.